QGCS is a small research and development and prototyping company in Monrovia, California, just about 10 miles east of Pasadena. And we work on battery systems, fuel cell systems, hydrogen delivery systems, and, as the name would imply, energy control systems.
And you have an offshoot, eDrive Systems. Can you explain what that is about?
eDrive Systems is a spinoff from EnergyCS, concentrating on the conversion of Prius and other hybrid vehicles into plug-in hybrids. EnergyCS is more of a design shop, and we're not really designed to interface directly with retail customers or handle kind of an assembly line kind of process of converting cars. So the idea was to separate the R&D side, you know, the brains from the brawn, I suppose, and move eDrive into a separate entity once we actually had a product that we had completely certified with the government and, you know, tested and were, you know, completely sure that we had a producible product. And unfortunately, we're still in the process of doing that. So eDrive, at this point, is just a virtual company.
Can you tell us about this product that you are developing?
The product that we're developing for eDrive is what I've been calling the second generation of the prototype vehicles that we have been producing here at EnergyCS. EnergyCS has produced about a dozen conversions, mostly for state, government, electric utility, fleet customers for testing purposes. But we've got, like I said, nearly a dozen of these vehicles on the road right now, mostly in California. We take Valence technology, U1 batteries, it's iron phosphate lithium ion chemistry, and we mold them and reshape them into a way that we can fit into boxes that we can mount in the back of the car in such a way that we get proper airflow through the whole system and can actually secure it well in the vehicle. But that whole process is very time-consuming and very labor-intensive. And so we've been trying to design a second-generation battery system that is smaller, more compact, and much easier to install, and more of a turnkey system, because the goal with eDrive is that although the initial installations will be done here in Los Angeles, we want to set up satellite locations in other parts of the country where, you know, say Joe's Garage can become an authorized installer for eDrive, and then they can just order the kits to be installed into vehicles and do those conversions themselves.
Can you talk about the promise of this new technology and what you think it represents?
Well, the plug-in hybrid allows us to migrate towards an electric-based transportation system. Me and my partner were very involved in the 90s with the electric vehicle program here in California, which we thought was the next big thing. It showed great promise, and a lot of us who drove these electric vehicles really enjoyed them. But the big drawback of the electric vehicle, of course, is the cost of the batteries and the limitations in that it may only serve 98 or 95% of your needs. But most people don't want a car that only suits 95% of their needs. And so the plug-in hybrid allows us to have many of the same benefits of the electric vehicle, that is, moving away from gasoline as a source fuel, which of course has all of the CO2 and international conflict, say issues, and move towards electricity, which we can produce here at home, whether it be through coal, which of course is not the most environmentally friendly method, but certainly abundant here in the United States, or nuclear, which is environmentally clean, but of course, as you know, has its own issues, or renewable energy. There's a lot of people who are investing in solar panels for their own homes, and there's a renewable portfolio requirement for many states, including California, to increase the amount of clean renewable energy, windmills and things like that. So it allows us to move from, say, oil from Iraq, you know, to power our vehicles, to something that we can grow here at home.
It would seem to me that this is a great business opportunity.
You would think, but then you might look back over the last 20 years and see how many people have gotten rich selling battery-powered cars. And other than people who've, you know, maybe shammed investors, I would say that's probably zero. And it's very difficult because it is a niche market, mostly because of the cost. But I think that as fuel prices rise, which I know we're in kind of a little dip right now, but expect it to go back up to $3 a gallon pretty soon here, I'd guess. And as the battery costs come come down, and as the battery technology matures, we'll start seeing, similar to with the regular hybrid vehicles, I mean, we got to a point where they could make a nickel metal battery that could last 10 years and put it in a vehicle like the Toyota Prius and take a, you know, what would have been a 25 or 30 mile per gallon car and bump it up to 50 miles per gallon. And while the Prius has been the only real smash success in the hybrid arena, I mean, there are other hybrids from Honda and Ford that haven't quite done as well, but the Prius has been the one successful, you know, shining star that shows that there are enough people out there willing to pay for a unique vehicle that either sends the right message or, you know, saves them money on fuel or whatever. And that gives us hope that there is going to be a large enough niche at some point in the future to enable these hybrid vehicles to actually have bigger batteries that are worthy of being plugged in.
What are the challenges that you're facing?
It's all about the batteries. It's about the battery cost. It's about the battery safety. It's about the battery longevity. The automakers have found that they can take a nickel metal hydride battery, use about 25% of it, and get it to last 10 years. Now, there have been vehicles, electric vehicles on the road that have gone over 100, 120,000 miles on a single battery pack. So there is hope that, you know, the battery technology is progressing to the point where we can have a long warranty on a vehicle that is more heavily used. But it's still quite a ways to get there. Lithium shows great promise because the actual material cost for lithium is lower than nickel metal, or at least is approaching that. And a lot of the research now into chemistries for lithium that are suitable for vehicle applications are taking place now, whereas a lot of the lithium research that has been happening over the last 15 years has been geared towards the consumer electronics market, you know, making a cell phone or a laptop that lasts, you know, that much longer per charge, but of course might be worthless in 2 years.
Do you think it's going to take companies that are nimble and small like yourself to actually force the larger automakers to come around to this sort of technology and adopt it and put it out to the marketplace en masse?
Well, what EnergyCS and eDrive are hoping to do with this technology is, as you say, demonstrate, you know, for those early adopter, that niche within a niche market, that this is a viable technology. Now, how viable is this at $10,000, $15,000, or $20,000 for a conversion? It's hard to say, but the goal will be to show that an OEM who is doing this from a ground-up vehicle could certainly do it for a lot less money, you know, maybe $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000. And are you willing to pay another $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000 to double your mileage once again, say from 50 to 100 miles per gallon? With energy prices, you know, poised to go up again, just because we're in a constrained environment now, there's going to be competition between all the different other alternatives like ethanol and biodiesel, and we're going to get to a point where we need all of them, and more of them, and more than we can possibly deliver, I believe. And so I see a point somewhere down the future, 2010, 2012, where all of these technologies will be doing very well. But right now, because of the price point on the batteries, it's really just a small niche market. And that's where a small company can really be most helpful, because the giant automakers aren't interested in producing a vehicle for a very tiny market, as Honda learned the hard way with their little Insight hybrid. It's a wonderful little vehicle, but Americans have just decided that they want, you know, bigger cars now. And I think that $3 and $4 or $5 gallon gas is going to change that, but it's going to take time.
And all we have to do is look at Ford, in a sense, and the $15 billion loss that they sustained when they banked on bigger, larger trucks and automobiles.
Yeah, for many years when gas was, you know, $1, $1.50 a gallon, these gigantic machines made from GM and Ford were the cash cow. I mean, it allowed them to take their otherwise fairly inefficient business and make it profitable, because for an extra $1,000 worth of sheet metal, you could add $10,000 to the price of the vehicle, and it was sheer profit. Now that you have higher fuel prices, it's going to be hard. I mean, they've got, you know, pension and medical issues and other things that put them in a very sad shape compared to some of their rivals.
I would imagine that this technology is probably a little bit more widely accepted and more easily adopted in European and Asian markets.
It's hard to say. I mean, certainly the Asians and Europeans drive smaller cars to start with. Some of that's because of their higher fuel prices, because of the fuel taxes, and some of it's just because they have little tiny streets and little tiny parking spaces. It seemed odd to some of us in the electric vehicle world that electric vehicles didn't take off better in Japan and Europe. And there are certainly are electric vehicles in Japan and Europe, but not to the extent that you would think. I mean, if you're paying a penny per mile for electricity versus, you know, 10 cents a mile for a bigger vehicle, of course, most of them don't have the bigger vehicles, so they're already fairly efficient. And there's a lot of diesel over there, so at least in Europe. So a lot of these little vehicles are already getting 40, 50 miles per gallon. And, you know, maybe a more expensive technology just isn't that palatable at the moment.
And your final thoughts on your company and the state of the fuel economy situation and hybrids, and kind of wrap it all up for me.
I think that as we get to this point where global supply of oil intersects somewhat with, you know, the demand for oil, and the demand for oil actually exceeds the available daily or monthly producible supply, we're going to see these gyrations in price where it'll zoom up to $75 a barrel, and then it'll drop back down to $60 a barrel, and then it'll go back and forth. And everyone will have a sigh of relief when it goes down, and everyone will panic when it goes up. But the trend is going to be upward. And so I think that the smaller, more efficient cars, like the hybrids and like the smaller cars, I think that the alternatives like ethanol are all going to come into play. And the technology that wins out, actually, that's not really fair. I think a number of technologies will win out. It's all going to come down to economics. I mean, someone's not going to pay an extra $5,000 for a car necessarily to save, you know, $200 a year. But if they can spend $3,000 extra for a car and save, you know, $600 or $800 a year, then, you know, maybe that's worthwhile. It's kind of skewed. Our whole political system's a little skewed. I mean, we subsidize oil and gas. You know, the alternatives have some subsidies, but not nearly to the extent that the ingrained oil industry does. And so you think, well, as a national strategy, should we really be, you know, spending, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars in Iraq and subsidizing oil drilling, or should we be looking at alternatives that are more sustainable? And unfortunately, we haven't really been making the right choices in my mind. So without that, it's going to take a little longer for these alternatives to come into the limelight, but it will happen.